Hi, this is Ray, the founder of The Fashion Pulpit, and welcome to our podcast. For this episode, we will be discussing the rise of secondhand in Singapore. And with me, we have business owners, fashion design professor, and a secondhand lover to help us discuss the ever-changing landscape of secondhand in Singapore.
To begin with, can you introduce yourselves and tell us more of what you do?
I'm Najla Matam Finn. I'm the CEO and founder of The Fifth Collection. We're a luxury fashion platform specialized in secondhand and vintage fashions in Singapore. So we opened in April 2014, but we've been working on the business for 6 years now. So essentially we help women who have way too many things in their closet monetize on them, while others who are looking for either a special piece or a good deal buy from us.
Hi, my name is Daniela, and I am a fashion lecturer in LaSalle College of the Arts, and I do a lot of research and writing about fashion history and theory, and I also co-host a podcast about fashion called In the Between. Nadia is over there.
Hi, I'm Isaac. I'm one of the dudes that's running Loop Gums. We are a vintage slash select store, a select vintage store that mainly deals with contemporary vintage, your late 70s, your 80s, 90s to the early 2000s. So a lot of like pop culture stuff, like your movie tees, your band tees, stuff like that. And we also have this buy-sell trade system where customers can also bring in their own like vintage pieces to trade for either store credit, which they can then offset the prices in store, or they get straight up cash for the item. So yeah, I'm running it with my partner FJ, who's at the store right now. So yeah, we're located in Jalan Besar.
Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm a social media advocate and environmentalist. I also work at Greens New Black as a content lead and writer. So Greens New Black, for those of you who don't know, is a lifestyle media platform. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I think to start with, for us to be all in the same page, I'll have Dani to help us define or tell us more history more of like where did secondhand start at the same time? How is it different across the globe?
Yeah, so I think we have a few big themes. For example, in Europe, it would be something that used to be out of circumstance. So people couldn't afford garments and then would turn to secondhand clothing in Victorian England, for example. And then in America, for example, vintage clothing and secondhand clothing became something as part of counterculture. So in the 1960s, the hippies, the students who were trying to protest against the Vietnam War, or who were trying to be protesting against what they saw was happening in society, started wearing military surplus, vintage clothing. And in the 90s, we had grunge that also had a lot of like vintage. There was a vintage comeback. In Asia, while we don't think that vintage is, or secondhand clothing is a very big thing, actually in places like in Japan, vintage became something very big from the 60s and 70s when youth cultures are where it's at, no? So young people were really into American vintage clothing. They were into jazz, they were into vintage Americana. And so that's where a lot of vintage and secondhand clothing came from. The interest for it came from in Japan. But culturally, the Japanese have this idea of motainai, so about not wasting. And you can see very beautiful examples of boro or kimonos that have been patched to pieces because people treasured material so much. So in general, the idea of secondhand clothing used to be something out of circumstance, and that's something you couldn't control. But now it's something that, and then in other cultures, it's something that people do because they treasure things.
Okay.
So I think those are the two big things that have.
Cool. Okay. So let's touch in the Asian market, since we are in this region. And aside from Japan, which you've mentioned, their culture for secondhand is more established compared to other countries. So what do you think are the stigmas, or why is it that in other countries such as Singapore, the secondhand culture is not as established? Like, what are the hindrances that's stopping us to be part of that movement?
I think it's always good to see why it succeeds somewhere else, to understand why it might not work so much here or before. And one is that people in Europe, for example, when they are taking on vintage or secondhand, they are taking it as something that expresses their identity, and it goes beyond social class. Whereas, for example, in developing economies or in places like Singapore, people for a long time maybe were dressing as to show their social status or how much they could afford something, and so wearing something that's old could be something superstitiously bad luck, or it could be just it's not showing how successful you are. And so as these ideas are changing and there is more awareness, there also needs to be more availability. So if there is the want, but there is no availability, then it wouldn't rise. So I guess through the internet and through different technologies, then now we can see that there is a rise for it and attitudes are changing.
Cool. Okay, so I mean, for the other panelists, what do you think have changed, or like how do you see secondhand now? What does it represent as compared to what Danny was mentioning about, like, before it's more about the economic status of, like, for those who can afford clothing, they would not buy secondhand. Is it changing that kind of perspective?
Well, for us, what we've noticed is that 6 years ago, when we pitched to family and friends about selling secondhand and vintage in Southeast Asia, a lot of people told us that it wasn't going to be possible. And I think one of the main reasons which you were touching on is feng shui, right? It's still very big, and in a lot of families, clothes often, you know, brings the soul of the person it belongs to. And so 6 years ago, when you talked about secondhand, let's put vintage on the site because it's a beast on its own. People thought like thrift, dust, someone died in it, everything, you know, all those really dark side that you could imagine in secondhand. They couldn't see that a lot of people were actually had way too much things in their wardrobe, and then, like, most of the secondhand pieces that at least I carry on my site were actually never used. So the already the definition in a lot of people's mind of what is secondhand was gazed from day one. Now we're seeing that there are places to go and buy secondhand, but now people are still a bit shy about owning it. So we're making progress. I think 2019 was a great year for our industry because the press has been talking a lot about it. We're getting a lot of activists who are finally, you know, showcasing why what we're doing has a reason, explaining to people, educating them, etc. But so 2019 is getting easier. Let's hope that by next year it gets even better. But I feel that from what I see, there's still a big shame about saying to your girlfriends that you're buying secondhand. Or I often see a husband who's like, I can't afford the real thing. And you're like, it's still the real thing. So yeah, so there's still lots of progress that needs to be made.
Hi. So I think for myself, because we tend to deal with a younger audience, so probably like 16, 17 to like 20, 21, that age. And I feel like, even before that, like I think what you mentioned earlier about like parents saying that, like way before I started like Blue Gums, I used to like try to find like treasures at like Salvation Army somewhere or something new, you know, all the mom and pop like thrift stores. And then I'll bring back like this like vintage Nike, a Kanye West tour tee, and I'll put it on our show, mom, dude, look at this treasure. My mom would be like, she'll say in Chinese, like in Mandarin, and it's super, like, it sounds so irritating, but as in, not Mandarin, Mandarin's great, but like, as in the way she says it, she said like, oh, this is 死人穿的. So it basically means all those are worn by dead people, like have been owned by dead people. I'm like, no, dude, they're fine. Like, you know, you're just like thinking too much. And I feel that that feeling and that sentiment are still actually around with all the older generation. Like you can see like kids coming in with their parents. Like I had one classic example on, I think it's a weekend, Saturday. Family came in, mom, dad, two daughters. Then the auntie came to the counter. Wow, my kids saw you on the internet. Wow, really very good. Very clever. You know, I'll find your store at Jalan Besar. Then after that, she was like, okay, I go look around. And then they went to the racks, they were looking through. And then I think the daughter pulled up in, I think it's an Adidas, like one of like the mid-90s like top. And then I think the daughter mentioned, oh, it's cool and whatever, right? And then the mom said, ayo, 这个我花多20块我可以买一个新的啦. Basically what she said was, I could pay extra $20 and get a new one. No, like I can find another one of these. No, you can't, auntie. You can't find that. Like, so yeah, and I think that's a sentiment. But like for the younger generation, I feel like their attitude towards secondhand clothing, or in our case like vintage, I feel like it still needs a certain educational process, because like, I feel like they think that, oh, what we're selling is just like, oh, secondhand clothing is something you find from someone's closet. But I think behind, like, you know, Alish mentioned, vintage is a whole other beast. There's a lot of sourcing to be done and to ensure its legitimacy, whether it's real vintage and not just like secondhand, you know, which is cool, it's fine. But, you know, because we have a lot of other odd, like sellers who claim that it's vintage, but it's not, it's just like secondhand piece. It's a reproduction piece of, let's say, this band, Typo Negative, but it's not like true vintage. And that confuses, I guess, the younger crowd because they're not in tune. So then they say, oh, if I can find it on Carousell for $20, this tee, why would I go to Luke Gums to buy it at $120, for example? You know, and I think that's where the education comes in. So yeah, I think that's mine.
Okay, cool. So I think we will agree that Nechla and Isaac has a thriving business in secondhand space in general. And also, you mentioning all those challenges and the negative stigma that comes along doing this business, why did you still do it? Like, what was the gap in the market that you saw and hence you started your businesses? Nechla can start.
You know, frankly, I started this business with trying to solve one of my problems. Seeing some waste in my own wardrobe, you know, I was in my mid-30s, and until then I've been shopping for at least 20 years of my life, and still every morning I had nothing to wear, right? And I saw that waste as more of a financial waste. I didn't fundamentally understood that there was such an environmental impact. People, you know, the fashion world is very secretive, so we couldn't really see what was going on behind the scene, but you were sort of aware of it. So I think what keeps me going is thinking that if I wanted to, you know, clothes give you a certain confidence, it can be trivial for some, but I don't really care where you shop from. If you have a reason why you come to me, or you go to Isaac, or you go to other people I'm seeing in the panel, you know, there's a reason for that. So for me, it was more, how can I give women like me a chance to be able to shop in a way that their money, their hard-earned money, brought them something, and vice versa. So I think despite all the challenges, which are daily, it's still being able to continue empowering those women.
Well, thank you.
I think for mine, it's like, for us, like myself and my partner, when we first started Luke Gums, it was, prior to Luke Gums, we were just collecting pieces, like just collecting pieces at home. We never sold online, nothing of that sort. It was more like, we want to share this love for vintage pieces, especially things that related, like, you know, that are related to pop culture. You know, when you see a tee or you wear a tee, or it's like, oh damn, it reminds me of this movie and all the good times. I feel like it's just wearable nostalgia is where we're going towards. So I feel like, I guess, yeah, with all the negative sentiments and all, we never really thought about that at that point of time. We merely just wanted to share our love for vintage pieces. So I think it was really just...
Okay. Having built a business already, and me and Dijla, when we met, we've always going to be talking about our clients, the different type of clients, no shade with our clients, but we love them. So there's always going to be some clients that make us laugh, that makes us like frustrated at the same time, that gives us hope, right? So with you having a 6-year business, has it changed in terms of you explaining the secondhand business? Are they more savvy or more easy to deal with now? Like, what were your challenges before that doesn't exist now?
I guess on day one, I deal with a lot of luxury brands, so I guess on day one was also the trust, you know, how do we authenticate peace? Once we gave them that, now I think we rarely have any questions on authentication, but it's more about the flaws, right? Like, so the biggest frustration till these days, I think 3/4 of my clients come because of the good deals. You know, whether we like it or not, like, I know sustainability is a big part of the conversation, but people will still continue to shop for a good deal. And so the times where I vent with Ray is that when you buy secondhand, you can expect those pieces to not only be a good deal, but also to be in perfect condition. Something has to give. And then the perception of perfect condition for an item that is wearable, there's something pretty odd about it when you think about it, right? When you buy a pair of shoes, you are gonna wear it. When you buy clothes, you are gonna wear it, a handbag, etc. So eventually it will get a scratch, it will get a flaw, because it's not a piece of art that you're gonna put in a museum, it's wearable. So I think the thing that frustrates us the most inside the team, I think, is that this expectation from the market that they want an absolute perfection at a bargain to be authentic with no flaws ever. And that's just impossible. Something has to give. So that's, I think, like, still the upper battle. We're getting there.
Is it the same thing when you started, or has it changed already?
Well, I guess we have a wider audience than when we started. I think when we started, it was much easier to get sellers. We still have a waiting list for people who want to sell with us. It felt like some Singaporean closet was just waiting for us to show up, and it just went. When it came to buying, it's still an ongoing education. Even people that sell with us don't think that they can't buy with us. And all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, if I'm selling from you, then it means another person like me is also selling with you. And I'm selling those things at such a good deal that there's maybe, but it takes such a long time because of the stigma I spoke at the beginning. All our sellers are alive, but they always think that the other piece, she's not. You know, it's very weird. It's a very, you know, I have clients who tell me, she's like, yeah, I understand. Please excuse me if I don't buy it from you, because I don't really know where it came from. And as soon as I'm like, but it's coming from a person just like you, who shopped way too much, her lifestyle is changing, you know, some are going also to different pace in their life, etc. So I think, yeah, it's still ongoing. Like, despite the fact that the business is 5 years old, every day we still get, you know.
You're also getting new clients,
exactly.
That has maybe first time kind of thing. Okay. So for Isaac, with your business, it's a bit different because your market is younger, and you use so much of social media to convey what you're doing. Was it easier in terms of the perception and the openness of the market because yours is younger, or has it always been like a struggle for you to educate your market?
Yeah, so I think in the beginning, when we first came onto the scene, there weren't many like like contemporary vintage stores like ours, there were probably like us and like two other people. So the market was very small. And then when we came into the market, we were the only full-time store. We're the only brick and mortar that opens almost every day, except Wednesdays. But we're still working behind the scenes. But so we're the only brick and mortar that opens every day. That did indeed help. I mean, with the help of social media, yes, everyone's like, oh snap, there's this new store that's opening every day. You know, they bring in vintage and buy sell trade. Oh gosh. The traction did, like, you know, through Instagram went up exponentially, like, oh, like visibility, you know, they're sharing. Sure, like for the first half a year, like when we opened, it was great. Everything was like times 10, like everything, right? And I think after that, let's not talk about like, oh, smaller stores opening up and whatnot, you know. But I think Singaporean youngsters, like the younger crowd, are a fickle crowd. They, for lack of a better term, I feel like they jump on the bandwagon a lot, and they don't take their time to actually understand what they're getting into. It's like, oh shit, my friend is going, oh, I'm sorry, can I cuss?
Yes,
sorry.
You can.
Okay, so, so basically she, like, you know, what did I mention? Oh, right, like people jumping on the bandwagon, right? They're like, oh, my friend is going, like, going to this store, oh, it's cool, they're taking pictures, what store is that? Let's go check it out, oh, they buy, and then suddenly we hear, like, you know, in the grapevines, like people saying, oh, vintage is the new hype. And we're like, wait, what? Vintage is the new hype? Like, because to them, like for the younger crowd, it's like anything new, it's the hype, right? I back then when I was slightly younger, it's like hipster, you know? Like if you try something new, oh, you're a hipster. But now it's like, oh, that's the hype. So I guess the challenge with educating the younger crowd is, again, like I said, you know, to let them know what is like vintage, you know, be it whether it's the stitching, the tags, or the licensing, you know, to ensure that, oh, you know, this is a real like vintage piece. Like, I mean, there's a lot more science to that, but I think, yeah, a lot of them, the education part is like, oh, Singaporean youngsters are very fickle. They don't want to absorb like the new stuff. They just want to like, oh, I'll consume, but you know, without like the educational process, because it bugs them. So that's why you tend to see them leaning more towards, I guess, the hype brands,
right?
Supreme, Palaces, you know, the name ones. So yeah, I guess that's the, yeah.
So with that challenge, how do you keep them in your circle, like your customer? Because like you mentioned, it's always about the hype. But how do you ensure that this people stays or consumes whatever you're selling?
Right, so I guess it's a two-part process. One being, you know, we try to dilute that whole very contextual, you know, heavy topic on like stitching tags, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's very like, to them. So we make it really simple for them to understand, oh, let's talk about what the history of this band is about. You know, what genre, what music, when did this album come out, when did this shirt come out? I feel like stories really like do help people to actually understand a piece better, you know? So I think that's one of the process. And also the other process would be to style items, like to style, like to, people want to see how this t-shirt can be styled or how this jacket is, you know, what outfits can you make out of it, you know, for them to actually envision themselves, oh, how am I gonna wear this? Oh shit, they actually did this. I could also, you know, take a leaf out of this book to do that same thing. And I think it helps in a certain way, but it's still a very slow process, which is also, yeah, it's an ongoing process.
Yes, for sure. And Tammy seems to agree so much of what you're sharing. As a consumer or as a lover of secondhand, we don't want to call that as consuming. What was your journey like in Singapore with the limitations? How was it like to be in that space?
I think I come from a very like new perspective because I was never really into like secondhand fashion until like about a year ago. So for me, like I don't really like know this like exponential growth in the secondhand industry in the past like four, six years. But like when I first started, like, it was before, like, I guess 1 year ago, it was still like not super mainstream yet. Mm-hmm. Now it's kind of become sort of a mainstream, I feel, from my limited perception of one person. But I think when I first started, it was like it was a lot of, there was a lot of difficulty trying to get, I guess, my mom on board with this whole thing. Like she was very, I guess she had the same sort of expectations and same sort of like thoughts that were already aired, like about how like they carry the spirits of dead people, and I was like, I'll happily carry the spirits of dead people around with these nice stylish clothes. But yeah, so at the beginning there was a lot of issues with that, and then I also found that like there weren't enough, like there wasn't enough information out there, so there was a huge gap on like where, on like information to tell me where I could like get secondhand fashion. So I felt that there was that gap, and so I wanted to fill it by sort of doing what I do now, which is like social media advocacy. So when I started to do that, I think like a lot more people realized that it was a viable option. Like they knew where to go, because I think a lot of people have this perception that's very far away. Like or like vintage shops or like secondhand shops are like just in this like ulu Singlish term, which means like far away, distant, I guess, place, remote. But in reality, if you just compile a list, it's not actually that far away, and it's like right next to you. It's like maybe like 30 minutes away, which is not that bad, and it's not that like uncomfortable. So really, like, yeah. And I think it's also, we're also riding on this whole like wave of secondhand, which has across the world become a thing, and I think Singapore is very much influenced by that as well. So that really helped. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've mentioned that you've also somehow fill the gap in terms of your like peers, because you've also organized a big clothes swap in your school and had like a guided tour of like where the secondhand's at in Singapore. Where is that openness coming from? Like aside from it being a thing across the globe?
Yeah. I think a lot of it also comes with like sustainability, like the bigger conversation about sustainability. Like this entire like secondhand market is very much tied to creating a circular economy, which I think our generation is, or at least our world at this point in time right now, is becoming much more aware of. And so pre-loved fashion and secondhand fashion, vintage fashion, they all sort of are avenues to act on like trying to be sustainable. So that is one of the like ways. Yeah, I think people really appreciate, like they get into it. I think there are two types of people who get into like secondhand fashion. People who like secondhand fashion because it's secondhand or vintage, and then there are also people who come into it because of sustainability. And I feel like that's an increasing number of people. Like they care about the environment and they're like, oh, what can I do? And then secondhand fashion is like one way for them to act. And it's a very fun way of acting, because like fashion is great and fashion's fun. And people also don't realize that fashion sucks. Like mostly this industry is a horrible, dirty industry, but yeah.
Okay, cool. So I think it's not just in Singapore that the rise of secondhand, the growth of secondhand is really picking. Because according to Business of Fashion and ThredUp, which is a very famous secondhand store in the US, had a report that secondhand market will grow 2 times in 5 years time. At the same time, it's about 51 billion industry now. So with that being said, and Danny had mentioned earlier that for a secondhand culture to thrive, it needs to have that availability and accessibility. So what do you think, how can Singapore establish a thriving culture in secondhand? Like how do you think we can establish a culture in secondhand in Singapore that is thriving?
So I think a lot of things that everybody has spoken about are some of the key things, and one of them is education, right? And it's not like teaching it in schools, but making it something that, like being very obsessed about something, like people who get obsessed about, let's say, 90s band t-shirts and like really go and research about it, I think that's a bigger driving force than telling people that, oh, stop being unsustainable, but that they have to find something within it that makes them passionate. So be it like the environment, be it culture, be it wanting to stretch the dollar a bit more to get something really beautiful from a luxury store.
Do you agree?
I mean, our case, it's funny because we're part of the same ecosystem, but we sit at the opposite somehow, but it's still different. But I think in my case, so my target audience is slightly older. And when you asked just earlier, like, how do you retain those clients and how do you make sure you bring new ones? So funny enough, we've noticed that a lot of people watch our social media, but they don't like, or they don't comment, or they don't follow. Yes. And I think that's something that's very important for all of us here, right? It's no shame, right? Like, if you like the work of something, or if you've seen something that you like, then show it. Because it will encourage all the people behind the scene that are working really hard to offer even more. So in our case, sometimes we're like, you know, we post something and go and see on our Instagram, we get 4 likes. Then I'm like, what the hell? Then I go on Google and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of people on the site. Or we even have people on customer service, like, I just seen your Instagram post, and we're like, I'm not seeing a like here. What's going on?
Right.
So in order for that to become a part of, like, a reflex for everyone to be part of, then we all have to do our little shares, our little like, our little comments, etc., to encourage the whole thing. So education is key, but also it's follow through that education. So I think that that's one. And I think a lot of people secondhand, like, you know, they call it pre-love. I like to joke that pre-love does not mean no more love, right? There's still something. So just each of us should be advocate of that. We build the fifth collection for anyone who wants to shop pre-love but still feel luxurious. And it has helped and hurt us at the same time. So I hear a lot of young activists who buy, you know, secondhand, who go to stores on Hash Lane and those kind of things. They won't dare come to my store because they think it's too luxurious. But at the same time, we had to fight the stigma on day one. So it's a bit of a catch-22, but I would love people to not go like, oh, if your brands are luxurious, then it's not sustainable. Because a fish, when he has a pair of Chanel shoes in front of them or a pair of plastic sneakers, it's a waste, right? So it'd be great to not segment anything that has to do with sustainability before, like, oh, this is high end, so I'm not gonna go and check it out. And this is more boho bobo and it's more me, so I'll go for it. You know, like, be more open-minded and curious.
Okay. I think for myself, again, I think education is key, by making education fun. Like for us, you know, we do like little like Insta story, like quizzes. So we put up this tea and then we say, oh, the backstory is this. And then, okay, make a guess. What is this character about? Then, you know, A, B, C, D. And then they get it wrong, but they get the right answer. And they, oh, you know, it allows them to think like, oh shit, like this is much deeper than it is. And I think, Najla mentioned earlier was also a big thing, like the help from everyone to actually not only, you know, like, but share. I guess, yeah, that really helps a lot to share the word. But then again, the onus is also on us to make the content interesting also, you know. So yeah, I guess that's the conundrum there, lah. But what do I want to say? Just support, man. I feel like, yeah, it's yeah.
I feel like creating a thriving secondhand culture in Singapore comes, like, a lot of it is about, I guess, rethinking our relationship with consumption and rethinking our relationship with stuff. Because I think, like, Singapore especially, we as a country grew very fast out of, I guess, nothing. And so that sort of very fast economic growth also led to very materialistic ways of thinking, and that's not necessarily like a bad thing, because a lot of it is like necessary, like you need to be like at the time at least you need to be materialistic to sort of do well and to feed yourself, right? But then now that's sort of like come with a whole slew of like terrible effects like global warming amongst a lot of other things, and also the issue about, you know, having a lot of stuff and like buying too much stuff and buying because of like status and not because, you know, you really like that item. So I feel like in Singapore especially, we could benefit from a rethinking of our relationship with stuff, and that can be created through like informal conversations, that can be created through like brand narrative storytelling. So like what Isaac was talking about, like storytelling, I feel like really like resonates with people. And I guess that's part of creating a culture of like appreciating and loving the stuff that you have. So really like emphasizing that it's important to know like where your clothes came from, or the hands that it's passed through when it comes to, you know, secondhand fashion, whether that's luxury or vintage. There is some sort of like, I think, magic or like fascinating aspect of it, like the fact that like an item has passed through so many hands. And I feel like once you, when you create that sort of narrative, people feel like they want to have it, or like it feels like that item has more value than what is advertised in the market. So for me, I think in Singapore, like we need to really like capitalize on that. That's a bad word, but but like we have to really like emphasize that and help that sort of grow, and that creates a culture of really like appreciating more, which helps a lot of other issues as well.
To add on to what Chita Sarisani recalled. So it's like through education, right, then we can change like the mindset of like the younger audience as well. Because like I think I mentioned earlier, I was talking with like Tammy, and like a lot of young people, they actually do want to try like things that are way out of their comfort zone in store, for sure. And then they will ask their friends like, hey man, hey, do you, wow, this is like really nice, eh? Then like the friend will tell, hey, that's not you, man. Then they'll be like, oh, snap. Like, you know, they actually want to try, but because of how they are afraid their friends would view them or their relatives or whatever, and then they would like, you know, not try it. So I think through education, we let people think that it's okay to be you and like, you know, to go for it.
Cool. Can I just add one?
Yeah, sure.
I love the fact that you brought up the idea of materialism, because anthropologist Daniel Miller actually says that we think our society is very materialistic, but actually we're not, because if we were materialistic, we would value material and we would value things. So we have to change the mind of that, and like everything is precious and everything is beautiful and everything took something from the earth to be made, right?
Cool. Okay, so I'm down to my last question. If you have any question, this is once in a lifetime chance that we have the four of them here. So you can prepare that. So my last question is, what do you think in 5 years is the future of your, how does your wardrobe would look like in 5 years now? Yours, and how do you want to see others' wardrobe as well? Is it gonna be more secondhand or it's a mix?
I'm already pretty minimalistic and secondhand already. I think someone in the audience earlier asked me, "Do you shop firsthand?" The reality is that I do less and less, and I think even today I'm head to toe vintage, sustainable, or secondhand. So I think my wardrobe of the future, or even my family wardrobe of the future, would be probably minimalistic, with some pieces that will be either from the secondhand market or the rental market, for the occasional wear that we all have, you know, a wedding coming up, a party, Christmas, New Year's Eve, those kind of things. And I think that would, the way we live with our wardrobe will actually extend to our whole life. I don't think the future is about owning anymore. It's going to be owning differently. I think we still can own differently and still talk about capitalism. It's just thinking about the whole supply chain differently. But yeah, so I think that will be my future.
Yeah, and also I hope that, well, there'll be digital quotes in 5 years' time. But also the other new business methods that have been springing up, things like sharing wardrobes, or like you rent pay subscription rates and then rent wardrobes or swaps, you know, and like just organic things that you would have done anyway, like
right.
swapping with friends, fixing things, mending your own clothing and not just like
shipping. Oh, I think for myself, my own wardrobe in 5 years time, I think it would probably be the same. I think this is not like all like greenwashing or like this is not from a standpoint of like sustainability or anything, like just like to be honest, but like other than my intimates, everything is like secondhand. I wear secondhand through Chinese New Year. Yeah, it's like my shoes, my pants, my shirt. Because I'm into like the vintage scene and I'm always looking for it just so happens to be old. So, you know, I guess then, you know, all my t-shirts are all like really like faded and like holes and everything. So my mom was like, no, you don't wear that for Chinese New Year. I'm like, mom, no, I'm going to wear it. And it's like, you know, so yeah, I think in 5 years time, it'll probably be like that. And yeah, I think for me, I wish for the younger audience to really try and expose themselves to like, you know, really find like pop culture, like vintage stuff, you know, to know the backstory also. And then yeah, to know that actually this whole thing is like really, really fun. Like, yeah. So I think that we want to try to translate that slowly but surely. So.
I feel like the correct answer for environmentalists is the same wardrobe. I will not change anything. But let's be real, that's not gonna happen. Because I love fashion too much to like to give up the idea of having like new things. So ideally, like that's the case, but in reality my wardrobe changes pretty often. So I feel like a wardrobe of the future would be hopefully like community wardrobes. So I feel like that would be something that I would want to happen like within like the same like sort of body types, people with the same body types having the same wardrobe. So you share from like a gigantic walk-in wardrobe where like everyone in your community or everyone in your size, you know, wears the same stuff, just that you share it and you don't have to like, kind of like a library, like a clothes library, like that'd be really sick. But I don't know if that will happen. We can play.
Cool, so very insightful discussion.
Thank you for joining us. We hope the power of swapping has empowered you to take a step farther towards a more sustainable lifestyle. And if you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to subscribe, share it with your friends, and even give us a topic that you would want us to cover next. Thanks for listening. Stay fashionably sustainable.